accession number 19094, reel 3.
Major Patterson, reel 3.
We got on very well with the American Marines, who were on occasions next to us in the line, and but I say that some of the other units of the American Army, they were a sort of conscript army and that, and that's equivalent of our TA, and they had a lot of casualties and unnecessarily on many occasions. And I think this was a case of they weren't trained enough, and they were probably badly led. And we used to get the regimental signs in the positions. This is the goddamn best regiment of the whole of the United States Army, that sort of thing. Or you would get on the roads that was leading to the north, which had been mined and wired, so that a notice is put up so that you wouldn't stray into them. You would get to such things as Captain Borowski went this way on a date or something like that. He ain't been seen since. That was the warning, that sort of thing. Silly little things like that. But the Marines, they were outstanding.
So when you say that the Americans were strange, you mean this type of thing?
Well, that and I said they were friendly people in that, right enough, but they did themselves got a lot of casualties unnecessarily. I remember one occasion in one of the positions we were in, on the trenches. The trenches were huge things. You could, some of them were that big, you could drive a jeep along them. And we had a place we called the Piccadilly Circus. That's where one or two trenches met and branched off. And at Piccadilly Circus, we had a foot used to hang out the trench, a body with the foot just hanging out. And this was our good luck symbol. We used to, every time we passed it, we used to give it a tap, sort of thing, and that. And whilst we were there, a strange pong started to arise round that area. And we wondered at first if it was the body that was buried there. And anyway, the foot was cut down and, petrol poured down it, and they thought that cured it. But again, this thing, the smells kept around that area and that. And so they decided they got that strong that there was something, there were more than that in the area. So there's... they started digging, and they dug out an old dugout. Four American sergeants were in it, and they were in the bunks, and they were, they were dead, of course, and but they weren't marked, so it was obviously they had either caved in or the explosive shell sort of thing, the blast, they were killed by blast. And they had all the papers and whatnot, and all the stuff on them, that the wristwatches and everything, as though they'd just been off duty and it happened. And that's where it was coming from. Mind you, it wasn't a pretty sight because they'd been there for some time. But anyway, they informed the unit they belonged to. And believe it or not, they didn't know where they'd gone to. So that they were taken down the bottom of the hill, and all the stretchers, of course, they had to be scrubbed and whatnot after that, because they were things were falling apart. But they, now that's a sort of a thing like that. Yeah, I mean, there were four NCOs there, all lying in a dugout, and the place had been handed over. You would have thought whoever was in command of that sort of thing, the immediate thing when you come out the line that you call the roll to ensure that you haven't lost people in there. But that's what happened on that occasion. But we had some good times with them when we were out the line. We were invited to the dinner night with them, and gave us a good time in that, and we did the same with them, and so there were some merry moments about it as well. And we had in our company, we had a fourth platoon, which was the pipes and drums, that became a combatant platoon because of our position. This was on the hook position. And they played a vital part in that. And we were always getting visitors, high-ranking officers, American, British, whatnot. And the commanding officer was he always managed to get a couple of papers sort of thing in that when they arrived. They loved that, especially the Americans. They loved that. But they played their part as a platoon with the drum major commanding it, and the pipe major was very badly wounded. He'd lost a foot. They did extremely well on the Battle of the Hook. And that was the main battle of the Korean campaign. There were four battles of the Hook, all told. One by the Marines, which we took over from. Two which we did, the second and the third. And that was my company on both occasions. And then the fourth by the Duke of Wellington, yes.
Can you describe what happened, your own memories of the second and third battles of the Hook?
The second battle of the Hook was that the usual thing, that was the 18th, 19th of November. The build-up started days before it, the shelling and the mortaring and whatnot. You could always tell when there was an attack imminent. And on the night when it actually started, it would be about just after midnight when we were informed that we're on the move. I was in the command post, and I left to go down the tank road. We had a tank on the top of the hill. And there was a road that you could get the tank up. So I went down that road, down to the admin area, and informed everybody there, that the things were about to happen. And we had down there the medical NCO. And you had a sheltered place there where casualties could be brought into, and you could deal with minor ones. And any severe ones, of course, would be taken casualty. But anyway, when the battle started, it was all hell let loose. They were in the trenches, literally before they knew what, before the shelling stopped. And there was a bit of hand to hand. The front platoon, the forward platoon, was overrun, and we lost a few prisoners. They took a few prisoners, but the platoon, the position wasn't lost. It was held. And then all through the night, Chinese kept appearing in all places, from all sort of directions and that. And battalion command post, they put everything they could across, shell fire and BT, that's with exploding in the air and shooting down sort of thing. and they put that across our own positions on top of us. But we had trenches built, or tunnels built in the trenches, where troops could get into when this happened. And when it lifted, they could come out and mop up. And that meant you had a lot of odds and ends. Very dangerous place to be in an open trench when you've got enemy running around it as well, and on the top of the on the sides of the trenches slinging in grenades. And but when this tunnel business, this was a great innovation by the commanding officer on that, and getting them in there, and the tunnels being built so they could be built at an angle, and then with a grenade shield as well, so the enemy couldn't shoot in the tunnel, so that we'd go right through with nowhere for the jocks to sort of take cover. We having the shield in that, this was ideal. And then you could collect any odds and ends of jocks that had got lost from the platoon of that in the melee, take them into the tunnel, and they could join in the mop-up. So this worked extremely well, but it sort of died down, and then it would start up again, and this went on all night. And again, they brought this VT on top of us, on top of the company position. And we did have a lot of casualties. There was a lot of casualties there. And in the admin area, the shelling was every bit as bad as anywhere else because of the overthrow. And all to transport that was in that area, that had all been knocked out. And I had a big ammunition dump at the bottom there, which I took over from the Yanks, it was. And we were dead scared that would be hit. But luckily nothing happened there, nothing happened at all. I don't know why, because it was right up against it. But anyway, the reinforcements that were called from a company on our right, they were very good and supporting. All our patrols had been withdrawn. You know, we had patrols out as soon as we knew that there was trouble. Brought them back in, and that included a chap called Younger. I don't know if you remember Younger. He was a defence minister in the Conservative government.
George Younger.
Yeah, he was one of our young officers, and he was out in the blow, but he came back, and said that he got the gravel rash coming back, sort of thing. I think he laid doggo until the passed him by, but he got in, and all the other patrols as well. But we had reinforcements coming from that company. Other companies were being brought up, because it was getting heavy and, you know, really heavy and thick, with Chinese popping up everywhere. And the PPCLI, they were notified as well to get a company up there. And as I say, this is how it proceeded all night until literally about 6 o'clock in the morning, when it all eased off. And there was still firing going on out front. And we had people out in the front as well. That was in front of the position. But the whole thing, over the air, the Chinese were calling for reinforcements, and they had been doing that for quite some time. So that was you could realise then that they were feeling the pressure very much indeed. Anyway, that was obvious that they withdrew. And I took the piece. PPCLI up the side trench, there was a trench from the administration up to the main trenches, and the place was in the trenches themselves, covered with all the battle muck sort of thing, bits of this and bits of the next thing. And I said to them, I said, now when you get up to the top, I said, for goodness sake, don't try to look over the rim of the trench at all, or trying to get to see what's on the front. you know, keep head down sort of thing. Although there was no need to keep your head down because it was deep enough. When I left, I was the last of the company to leave. When I come back, down the bottom of the hill, there's the two IC of the company lying there, PPCLI, very badly wounded indeed. So I said, what happened to you? Oh, he said, I had a look. I said, well, I told you. I said, you know, I doubt if he got more than half a dozen yards along the trench before he was hit. Very stupid of him. But again, and I say these things happened and that, and he was a nice little chap, and you know, a nice, but it was great pain. I don't know how he got on. And there it was. The Hook battle was, it really was something to speak about. And that became a battle honour.
You should say PPCLI is Princess
Princess Patricia Light Infantry.
Canadian Light Infantry,
yeah. Good regiment. And they actually took over from us when we left there. We went back and, as I say, we had a lot to get the company together again, with the casualties we'd had and what have you, and weapons and the usual thing, the clean-up and what have you, and getting things back in order. But we were all no more than a few days out now, we were back again into an intermediate position, just slightly behind the Hook, which we stayed there for. That wasn't too bad a place. That was quite quiet. But the second Hook battle was around about May, I think that was. That wasn't nothing as bad as the first one. That wasn't as bad, not in any way at all. The only thing is we lost two fine officers on that.
What exactly happened?
I think one of them, a very nice young man, he was a National Service, we're both National Service, a very nice young man, and the sort of fellow that you wouldn't dream of would have been an army officer, but he was so dedicated in that his troops loved him, and him and his sergeant in the dugout, their platoon command post, and that they got a shelter themselves, and the no marks at all. It was just a an explosive from that, and that blew them. I think the company runner or his batman, a young lad that was there, two of them there, he went a wee bit odd, so we had to comfort him a bit.
Did this second battle of the Hook involve a ground attack by the enemy?
Yes, but the build up when that started, there wasn't the normal saturation shelling that takes place with all Chinese attacks. There were none of that on that one, and it happened suddenly. But again, it was pretty much a set piece thing, and then we had a new company commander by that time, and we knew everything sort of fell into place, so that it was over. Well, it was over very quickly. And as I say, it was like doing an exercise at the School of Infantry.
You mean
where you knew what was happening. You were the director, the directing staff in that, so you knew the answer to it, and you applied the rules accordingly. It seemed to go that way.
So it was predictable.
Yeah, it was.
You mentioned the Americans and the Canadians, but do you have any memories of the other Allied troops?
We had the Bandus. They took over from us once. And I think we had Turks at one stage in that. And the And it was, we didn't have, you know, they were only sort of taking over, so we didn't have a great deal to, you know, time with them, sort of thing. That their advance party, that we didn't speak, but he didn't. Well, no, they didn't speak any English at all. My school day French wasn't all that adequate, but we managed to, you know, get to understand each other, sort of thing, and that. And, but they were very nice, seemed to be very nice blokes, I must say.
And the Turk?
Turk said, again, I didn't, they weren't on my part of the line, no, I'm not with my company anyway, but they took over from, I think, one of the companies.
What, as far as you were concerned, were your main problems in doing your job in Korea?
My main problems? Our main problems, as far as I could see, was that every position we took over, it didn't come up to the standards that we wanted it to be. And we always found this out, and we always ended up, you know, sort of having to do all the hard work. As no sooner was that finished, then we were handing it over to someone else. We couldn't complain about food, because that was excellent. The food we got there was very good indeed, far superior to anything that we got during this, you know, the Second World War and the desert and that. Our clothing, winter clothing and that, you couldn't ask for anything better. The Americans probably had much the same as ourselves, but the only difference, they had a fur-lined, you know, a sort of hat, these Eskimo things. But the wet weather boots, that sort of stuff, that was all very, very good indeed. So we were well equipped. Nothing like what there were in the early stages of the war, when the units like the Argyles and those other ones now.
Middlesex,
yeah. Both machine gun battalions. That they had only their normal clothing, right in the midst of a very, very severe winter. So they didn't have the best of that. But there seemed to be plenty of everything as far as weapons and that went, and the supporting arms were very, very good indeed, especially the artillery. And our own mortars, we did mortar platoons, we had more than one. They were under command of a young officer back in battalion headquarters, supervised by a support company major. And you no sooner asked for support, you know, defensive fire or defensive SOS and that, it was there. You know, they really did. It was on the dot, and there's no question about it. And the Americans were very good indeed. One thing that we tried out once, and which I always thought ought to be used again, was that we did try out Monty's Moonlight. Now, that's where you have searchlights in the rear of the line, and if you have you can use it at low cloud, where you bounce the light off low cloud onto the, you know, where the battle is going on. This makes a vast difference, irrespective of the sort of the clouds of the, you know, weapons going off and explosives and that sort of thing and that. That's still pretty good. We never took advantage of that, and I can only remember using that being used once with us. I thought they could have done better than that. We used it more often.
Did the political aspect of being in Korea make any impact on you at all?
We all knew that when Attlee was asked for troops to be sent to Korea, he was very, very much against it because of the state of the economy. I mean, the war had only been, you know, more or less a few years finished, and the economy. They didn't want to get involved in something very heavy. The Americans, with the MacArthur, you know, being king of Japan, he wasn't interested. He didn't want to get involved either. And there was a limited number of the Americans in Korea when it, you know, when this took place, when it started. So that was all very, you know, very, very hazy. And you felt that, it was solved by the time we got there. But I would have thought that the troops were there, that they felt that there was probably been, you know, that the politicians were not pulling their weight, I would have thought. But it didn't affect us.
Did it make much difference to you being part of a United Nations force?
It was a unique thing to happen, and I think the first time only. Luckily, it was the general that was in charge was he was a Cameron. Was it Cameron? No, not a Cameron name. Seaforth. General Cassells, I think it was his name was. And he was very good, you know, having a Highlander as far as we were concerned, having a Highlander as far as we were concerned anyway. And he was extremely good. And we had one not so good brigadier, who soon went on his way. The second one was excellent, really, really top class. And of course, the commanding officer himself, he was the, you really couldn't ask for anything better. He really was the, and he had, you know, very few of the battalion, when he came to us, when he got command to take us there, because the officer that was going to take us, who was commanding officer in, when we were in Germany, had a heart attack, and the command, the Colonel Rose was informed more or less, you know, 2 hours notice that now you've got command of the first battalion, you'll have to move in a few days. And he was an excellent background, right? You couldn't ask for any more. He got a DSO in East Africa, the big, you know, the Italian affair there, and another one in Korea as well. And he had done the desert, and he had been in the Far East as well. So you couldn't ask for any. He was an officer at the. Everything was for the job, you know. He would do anything to support them, anything at all, and to get things done, you know, so that would better them. So that we were very lucky that way. My own company commander, he had been a prisoner of war. After the, at the beginning of the war, I think he'd done about the 5 years there, but when he took over came back to the first battalion after the war, now you couldn't have asked for a better block. He had a bit of a short fuse, you know, but if he knew his moods and that, you could work accordingly, and that, and very strict with his young officers, very strict. In fact, I actually think myself at times, you know, you...